This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Sponsored by Saligi Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer. And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis, Chesterfield Fence and Deck, and Budweiser.
Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
A lot of great sponsors right there. A lot of great sponsors, including Budweiser. Oh, is today the toast? I got to get a beer.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Do you have any beer in the fridge?
Yeah, of course there's beer in the fridge.
There's beer in the fridge, right?
Yeah, that's
got to be.
It's my pre-show six-pack.
Oh, good. Well, yeah. You know, we do tend to go through them, so... week to week with our Budweiser toast.
You ain't joking.
Look who else I found in the sports office.
Matt Pauly's here.
I'm
What's
very
going
excited
on, guys?
To have you.
Hey, buddy.
In you studio.
Know, yeah, man. You know, you and I don't get to do a lot of shows together. You're with this guy all the time, but you and I don't get to do this together. So when I saw you here, I'm like, wait a minute. Gas House Gang. Let's go.
We're going to talk to this guy.
We don't even see each other. Our hours are very, very different.
We work different shifts, but man, I listen to the heck out of everything you're doing. You're doing a great job. And I think the Cardinals are doing a great job, and that makes listening that much better. I truly believe, Matt, that when the Cardinals are good, everything is better. I think that people in St. Louis start to talk about it more, which creates better work environments, better family environments. I really believe this. I think that when the Cardinals are good, St. Louis, just overall, everything is better. And that could be. We'll see. But so far, so good.
So one of our mutual acquaintances, Tom, I'm at Target the other day, and I see Ron Zetcher, my former freshman football coach. And the first thing, he just wants to talk Cardinals baseball with me. It was a day after McGreevy pitched. He was, how about McGreevy last night? And then, you know, wanted to talk about Matthew Liberatore's curveball and what he did a couple games ago. And that's, you just walk around this city right now, and everybody wants to talk Cardinals baseball. It's everywhere. And it's so awesome when it's like that, and it wasn't like that as much over the last couple of years. I even think, you know, you go out, everybody's wearing Cardinal stuff again. There was a period where a lot of people wore it, but you weren't seeing it quite as much. There is that pride of the Cardinals in St. Louis is starting to build back right now.
I think people, I mean, they're winning right now, but I think regardless of that, people feel like they're a fresh start has happened here. And so there's optimism about it. And, you know, there are going to be the holdouts who want them to be good right now, want them to be championship level right now, which just isn't realistic. But then I think you have a lot of Cardinals fans that understand a process is happening. And with new leadership, it feels like everything is going in the right direction. I believe there's more patience with this team than... Maybe us sports people will hear, because we hear from those who are upset, and Paulie and you hosting shows. I'm sure you hear from them all the time. Post-game shows, sports on a Sunday morning. But I do think that for the most part, Cardinals fans have optimism, and they're going to give leeway to the organization to move forward.
I do find that on social media, you have to just sort of take it as it is. There's always going to be the negative people, and kind of know who they are. We start to see them pop up on Twitter all the time.
And you know what, Tom? Great.
I love it,
because that means they care.
Yeah, they do. And I love interaction. I've said this forever. The negative feedback, the negative interaction was always something I wanted to see. I wanted to see people at least showing the passion for the team and talking about it. What you don't want, of course, is apathy. That's the worst thing you could possibly have. And right now it's the opposite. You're seeing people talk about the team, and it is very positive. And I think that whether it's social media, whether it's being out. I mean, I was at the MAC having breakfast this morning. Everybody wants to talk about the Cardinals. A daughter's function at school. People come up. They want to talk about the team. People are excited about the team. And I think, Matt, the number one thing that people say is refreshing. It's young. And yes, they understand these puppies are going to make some mistakes and they're going to run into the wall once in a while. But the baby birds are growing right before our eyes. And I just told you in the office, I don't think that they can go backwards. I don't see a team that is going to regress. I think what you're seeing here is just the beginning of a movement. Now, the one thing that could hurt them is an injury. Like, if there's one thing right now, I agree with Greg Amsinger, who said on this show Monday that they'll be in the wild card hunt. Agree. I think the one thing that would hurt them would be an injury to a starting pitcher or two. Because beyond that, they don't have a lot of depth. And, of course, one of their big offensive pieces or something like that, because they're not showing a lot of firepower across the board offensively. But, man, it's a nice team with some grit.
It is. The lineup depth isn't there. The top four guys are doing a really nice job. We saw that again last night in the way that they scored some runs. They got a little help from the bottom of the order. You know, Pozo coming up with a hit, Fermin coming up with a hit there in the first inning as they put up the four runs. But right now, those top four guys are really what's driving the bus offensively. They can't afford for any of those guys to step back, because when it's four guys in the lineup, that group's probably going to come around about every other inning. So the other team's always planning for that. You're getting that chance. All of a sudden, if that's a three-guy situation, everything changes. Then it's like every third inning that group's coming up, and you're not for sure that you're going to be in a situation where you've got somebody who can drive in runs. So I think having those four guys continue to do what they're doing at the top of the order, you can sustain, I think, some run scoring if they continue to play at that level.
Yeah, it's. I think it's tough to have a third of the lineup, or just, you know, 4/9 of the lineup producing when the rest of it is struggling. You're going to have tough stretches if that's all you can get. But at least it's not like two guys.
Yeah.
You know, at least it's not two that you're... Maybe this is a low bar, but I don't... You could probably argue it's a low bar, but I don't think that it is, given what the season is supposed to be. Right? This is not supposed to be a team that wins the division. They're not supposed to be a pennant team. I mean, they could end up being. Hell, a bunch of things could come together the rest of the year, and we could find ourselves in a playoff conversation in September. Maybe that does happen. But I'm just saying, for this year, the important thing is continued development. And we're seeing it from some guys who really are supposed to factor in the future. Walker, to me, is it what Jordan Walker has done this season is extremely impressive, and it's almost a relief, don't you think, that you've got this guy who we've been waiting on for a couple of years now to do this. He did it at the very start of the season. He had about a week or two where he was struggling, and he's rebounded from that. He's right back to what he was doing at the beginning of the year. I am so encouraged by that. It gives me the feels. You know what I mean? Because we've been waiting for this guy to do that. And that is such an important key for the future.
And as Amy said, you know the team is doing well when you get upset and they lose close games. Totally agree. We talked about that on Monday. Amy commenting on YouTube. And as Ken just said, a nice bounce back from that disappointing loss Sunday. That's the thing right there, Matt. They've only lost three games in a row twice. And that was the last two against Boston and the first one against Cleveland, and they got swept by Seattle, and that was in mid to late April. They haven't lost three in a row since then. They bounce back. When they get hit, they get off the canvas, and they come right back at you, and you just knew it was going to happen. That high ERA for the Athletics at home, and that first inning, the Cardinals jumped all over them last night and took control of that ballgame.
And what's really interesting is the bounce back, the ability to deal with adversity. They've got those two losing streaks. Well, they come out of those losing streaks and immediately go on winning streaks. And the way each of those winning streaks happened were interesting. You had the Cleveland game where the error is committed in the ninth inning that just extends the game, and they end up tying and then going on to win it. And then against Pittsburgh, coming out of that Seattle series, they were down 2-0 in the ninth inning, had done nothing, and then all of a sudden they explode for the four runs in the ninth, and then they go on another winning streak. Then they have, on Sunday, they have arguably the worst loss of the year. Two strikes, two outs, ninth inning, up 2-0, and you end up losing that game. What do? The next game, in the first inning, they go score four runs against an A's team that's one of four teams in the American League above 500 and is currently the first place team in the American League West. That's a good American League team. I was curious to see if they would bounce back, and not only do they bounce back yesterday, it's that first inning. They hadn't scored a single first inning run on the road trip. They hadn't scored four runs in the first inning in like 2 years. September 2024, I think they had a 9-run first inning against the Cubs in St. Louis. So, I mean, they're doing things that they haven't done in a while.
Yeah, and I heard Klaibs bring that up to Weatherholt in the post-game interview. And I think JJ and these guys, all they know is what's going on right now. They don't know anything about the past or any of these. Some of the former, like Mason Wynn was a member of some of those teams, and there are a couple other guys, but a lot of these players, this is all fresh for them. They're new. They're into it. It's very, very exciting to see that style. And I'll say something else about last night. Riley O'Brien, man. I mean, that is an absolute gut punch that he took on Sunday. He looked as good as I've ever seen him on Thursday, the first Padres win. Then he takes that gut punch, comes right back. And Chris, he had an extra day to think about it. he had 48 hours he had to sit on that home run by Castellanos that ended up getting the Padres the win. After Castellanos tied it, he goes through that whole off day Monday, comes back, and shuts down the A's in a 6-4 winner last night.
And you know what? He's one of the oldest guys on the team, and he's only 31.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, him being able to rebound from that, I didn't really have much of a concern about it. I thought he was going to be fine. Rest of the bullpen, I think we know they've had their issues, and that's the weakest part of the team at the moment. But I cannot get over the fact that all of this that's happening is being done with a roster that I don't think anybody in the starting lineup has had their 29th birthday yet. And I don't think anybody in the rotation has had their 29th birthday yet. That's like, so it's there's so much encouragement that I am getting from watching a team this young do what it's doing, because you know what it does? It gives them a head start for next year. It gives them a head start for the future. And I'm not completely dismissing all of 2026 here, but watching what the individuals are doing, it makes you feel pretty good about what's coming, not just what's happening right now, but what's coming.
I keep going back to something Chaim Bloom said in his introductory press conference, because he was very clear. If there's a decision in front of us and it's going to have a long-term benefit or a short-term benefit, we're going to make the choice for the long-term benefit. But he thought those were good decisions. And he also made the comment, sometimes you just get rewarded in the now for making good decisions. And that's a life lesson in there. You make good decisions, you're probably going to be rewarded. I think the Cardinals have been doing nothing but making good decisions, even with many of those decisions being looking at 2027, 2028, and beyond. But they are being rewarded with good stuff happening now.
Let me float this to you. And I don't know if I know we've talked about it with somebody, and I forgot who it was that suggested it to us a couple of weeks ago. Maybe I presented this to you. I cannot remember if I had, so I'll bring it to you anyway. But if they do get to the trade deadline, and it still kind of looks like this, where, you know, they're in the wild card conversation. Maybe they're not leading the Central, but they're in the wild card conversation. They've got this plan, which I believe they should stick to and adhere to it with discipline, because that's going to pay off in the long run, I think. But the suggestion was, you know, maybe sometimes you need to reward the team in the now, though, and reward a fan base by making a move at the deadline. Maybe you do add somebody to help out, because you're at least sending a message to the guys on the team that if you play well, we're going to believe in you enough to help you out down the stretch here. Do you think they would do something like that? Or is it way too early to even talk about it?
I think it's a little early, but I also think that I don't think they're going to do anything that at any way impacts the future. Maybe they don't trade somebody. Maybe they don't trade a Riley O'Brien. Maybe they don't move on from somebody. But I think there's some small pieces that you could add. Can you go find another reliable bullpen arm? Yeah, you can do that. So I don't think they make a splash. They don't give up anything that's a big part of the future, but I could still see them adding a little bit.
So maybe you touched on the thing that is more likely, that if they are playing like this and they've got a couple of guys that look really attractive to true contending teams, they might want Riley O'Brien. So would they avoid trading him knowing they could get some real future help out of that deal? I mean, do you do that to this collection of guys who's playing pretty well, feeling pretty good about themselves? And if they are still playing well when you get to the end of July, is that a bad message to send?
If you have a young gun closer who can just jump right in there and pick up where Riley left off, then you're good. And somebody's just closing games. I love Riley O'Brien, but if you can get something for him and it's just a transaction and you have somebody that can pick up the slack, then let's go. But right now they don't have that guy.
I lean toward what you're saying. I would, if you can get assets, if you could get a really nice piece for the future, you got to make that deal.
Yeah. And, you know, in the same breath, you could add somebody out there who's not going to cost you a whole lot, who might be able to gobble up an inning of relief every now, high leverage, and maybe add a starter for depth.
I know we got to get to a break. Just bring up this. One of the few mistakes the Milwaukee Brewers have made in recent years, the year they traded Josh Hader because they knew they weren't going to be able to re-sign him, that fell so flat in that clubhouse. That was the year they fell out of first place.
That's right.
And the Cardinals ended up winning the division. That was in 2022. So the clubhouse is an organism that you do have to be careful with.
That's right. Very, very true. And they're going to have to read all of that. We're going to come back and talk a little bit more about this club, and we will take your comments. I see Zachary's there. I see Lauren jumping in. There's a lot that we want to get to. We'll do that on the Gas House Gang. Hey, we got a couple things we're going to do today. We're talking some baseball right now with Chris Ronji, Matt Pauly. I'm Tom Ackerman, Gas House Gang. Matt Pajeski, Frank Ladd. We're all here. We're all here. We're going to talk a little more baseball. Dan Reardon, KMOX Senior Golf Editor, will be covering the PGA Championship starting tomorrow morning outside of Philadelphia. We're going to talk to him about that on this show this hour. And then in our final segment, it's our Budweiser Toast, and I have a very special announcement about an event that I will be doing. Well, not just me. Three prominent former Cardinals will be joining me. And I will announce that coming up here in our Budweiser Toast. How's that sound? Does that sound good to you?
It's a tease.
And I just went into the sports office. We have three frosty cold Budweisers, long necks, in that fridge.
You better bring them in here before
That's very, very exciting.
Here get to them.
No, they are secure in the fridge, although I just told everybody about it on KMOX Radio. We have Cardinal baseball tonight at 8:40. And Matt Pauly, let me get back to you because you will have pre and post tonight. The Cardinals' Andre Pallante pitched yesterday, but I'm pretty excited about what I saw last from tonight's starter, Matthew Liberatore. I think this is a big development for them. I thought McGreevy would be fine, but what I was excited about to see was how Libby bounced back and looks like a top-of-the-rotation starter for this team right here, right now.
For me, the difference in his last start was the curveball. It was a pitch he hadn't really been throwing that much, and he hadn't been overly effective with it. That curveball looked like a big-time weapon in his last start. It was just one start, but if he can continue to do that, then I think very quickly he looks more like the guy that we thought he was going to be this year when the Cardinals put him as their opening day starter. I was a little worried about him, some of the contact numbers, and his fastball. Like, he's still trying to figure out which fastball to throw and which one to have the most effectiveness with, because when you look at the four-seam that he throws the most, but he'll throw a cutter on occasion, he'll throw a sinker on occasion. There's a lot of damage against that pitch. That's something that he still needs to work on. It was a little bit better the last time out, but the fact that he was able to so effectively throw the curveball, that's the thing I'm going to be watching tonight. Is he able to do that in back-to-back starts? And if he is, that's a really good sign moving forward.
Yeah, he's not a true number one in the sense that we usually talk about an ace on a staff. But that's somebody who should be mid-rotation and should be solid. That's kind of what I've always thought he was. I mean, going back to the beginning of last year, I suppose. And for me, it was just a matter of how many innings is he going to give you in 26. That's it. And as long as he can get up to like 170, 180 in that range, that's what they need, because they do need innings from their starters. I know the game is different now than it used to be, and teams are using openers and starters don't go as long as they used to, but you still need some guys that do. And that's really all I was expecting from him. But in terms of effectiveness, he's about what I thought he would be.
As for the rest of the rotation, Dustin May, look, pro. He's going to give you all he's got. I'm not sure what his status will be at the deadline, depending on where they are. I think they need him. But I think he's certainly attractive to somebody if they were out of the race. But we'll see what happens. Pallante, we just saw him yesterday. Nice little bounce back. Actually had a good bounce back in his previous start. After getting rocked early, he ended up pitching six innings. The guy that intrigues me is Kyle Leahy, and I'll explain. He's still very much in transition. I mean, he's started games before, but he's trying to figure out, again, how to be a starter, get the routine down. You ever look at this guy pitch? He's 6'5", 225 pounds. He's a big guy. He's got that great extension. I just think there's a lot there. I think that Leahy has that cool, like, calm demeanor also, which is required to be able to do what he does. I think there's a chance that he could be something really special, and they spotted it last year when he was in that long relief role.
Yeah, I think he's still figuring out economy of pitches. Yeah, he had to come out. Who would have ever thought that you would ever complain about Leahy giving you five shutout innings? Like, if you view him as your fifth starter and he's giving you five shutout innings, that's a win all the way around. But that was the one thing that, it, you know, that pitch count gets up on him sometimes. It's not the biggest issue if you're going five shutout innings, especially if you're getting six more often from Libertor, if you're getting six occasionally from Pallante. If those other guys can give you six, you're in pretty good shape. But yeah, I think it's been fun to see the evolution of Leahy. At some point, he's going to hit a wall. We saw that happen last year with Matthew Libertor. You can't jump into an every fifth day starter without at some point hitting a wall, and the team's going to have to pump the brakes, and they're going to have to massage it out a little bit the way they did with Libby last year. But I think we are watching development. There are still some underlying numbers that are not great when it comes to Leahy, but he's got so many pitches. I'd like to see the he can't match the velocity that he has as a reliever, as a starter, because of how many pitches he's throwing. He was able to use velocity a little bit more as a weapon as a relief pitcher. Does that come back a little bit? Maybe that's a next year thing or a two years down the thing or down the road thing because the arm develops as a starter. But yeah, I like what we're seeing. That's a long answer to say, yeah, I like what we're seeing from Leahy.
I don't think on this rotation, he's not the fifth guy. It's really Pallante, right?
There's a bunch of guys who fall into that four or five slot. Yeah.
So what do you think his ceiling is then?
I don't know. A guy that takes the ball every fifth day and gives you a chance to win. And I think it's, for me, I'm more worried about some of that underlying stuff that makes you worry. Does that get better? Does the hard hit rate go down? Items like that. I have a hard time. I'm not trying to put the guy down. I have a hard time seeing Kyle Leahy and saying, oh, this is a top of the rotation guy.
No, I think he's a big league starter, a 3, 4, or a 5 who's going to be solid for you for a number of years or for somebody else wherever he ends up. But I think the Cardinals could, and look, the Cardinals have some big dogs coming. I mean, let's be honest. They're down in the single A, double A, in some cases triple A, and they're going to break through eventually. But Leahy, I think, has the makeup, from what I can tell, he could be a reliable every fifth day guy.
You win over 162 games by having pitchers who can keep you in the game and can help you win games every day. Maybe that's not how you win in the playoffs, but it's how you win in the regular season, and he can help you win games in the regular season.
As for a Riley O'Brien tradable discussion, Zachary says it would hinge on what happens with Swanson the next month or so. I would agree with that. I'm just throwing some comments out there because I said I would. Jim Kennedy, go Cardinals, great win. JJ destroyed slider. Yeah, JJ said it was he said it was like a slider cutter thing, is what he told Mike Claiborne that was thrown to him that he hit over the wall. That was a pretty exciting moment for him. Mitchell says Scott, Sejacy, and Urias have been a disappointment so far. Starting to think that this might be just who Scott and Sejacy are. Is a move to Memphis needed right now? I want to throw that question to you right now before we take a break, Matt. Sejacy, Urias, Scott. Where do you see those guys? I think Scott's got to be around until Lars comes back, right? And then you make the decision there what your outfield's going
to
start.
Yeah, I think Sejacy does need a trip to AAA. They wanted to send him there, and then the Urias injury happened and he came back. He doesn't have a hit since the Boston series.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. His batting average has dropped from like 270 to, I think it's in the 130, 140s right now. It's dropped 120 points since his last hit. So I believe in Thomas Sejacy. He's not working at the big leagues right now. Victor Scott II, we've seen a few things from him recently, but it's going to be hard for him to find playing time if Nathan Church keeps doing what he's doing once Nootbaar gets back. What was the third one? Arias. He is who he is.
Yeah.
He's injured right now.
Would you pay for him $2 million to be your utility guy who can have a nice glove, occasionally hit one over the fence?
And hit lefties. He hits lefties. Right. That's fine.
Batting average isn't everything, obviously, but you got a couple of guys hitting in their hundreds.
Yeah.
You know, and what for me in a 250? That's, your bench is not particularly strong.
Nice hit for Fermin and Pozo yesterday.
Yeah,
Pozo going up against
the two lefty. Out hits there in the not in the first inning. Yeah,
More Cardinals coming up later in the show. But Dan Reardon from the PGA Championship is coming up in our next segment. Welcome back to the Gas House Gang with Chris Ronji, Matt Pauly in studio today. I'm Tom Ackerman. Great to be along with you. Always great to be joined by KMOX senior golf editor Dan Reardon, who is out covering another major this week. He is just outside Philadelphia at the PGA Championship. Hello, Dan.
Hello, Tom. Looking forward to it. It's a course I've never been to. Most of the media I've never been to. I think everybody is is looking to see what we're going to find out starting tomorrow.
It's Aronimink Golf Club, which has some history there, Dan, but certainly, as you said, not as familiar to a lot of people. What kind of a course is it? Let me ask, who does it favor, if any, out there this week?
I think that largely depends on whether they get rain, which is right now showing up on the radar tonight and tomorrow morning. Without the rain, the course will favor players who are really adept with their wedges and putting. With rain, it's going to bring a lot more people into the field because if the greens are soft, that's the only defense this golf course has. This is like many golf courses in the country where they've decided it's a good idea to take out most, if not all, of the trees, and they've done that at Aronimink. And Rory McIlroy talked about the fact that decisions off the tee are a non-factor for this week because it's so wide open. You know, this is a Bryson DeChambeau party course because he can just bomb it anywhere he wants. But if it stays dry, the greens are severe enough. I heard they just finished the press conference with Kerry Hay of the PGA. And I heard something said at this press conference that I've never heard said at a major, and that is, some of these greens have slopes that are severe enough that they may cut them to different speeds depending on the hole. And I've never heard that mentioned. You know, at Augusta, they have speedy greens, but they cut them all the same. If they're cutting, they're particularly worried about the 11th green. And if they're cutting them at different speeds, I think the players will object to that because then it becomes a guessing game for almost everybody.
We know the favorites. We know Scotty and Rory and Bryson, John Rahm and Cameron Young. But there's one guy out there in Jordan Spieth who is one win away from completing the career Grand Slam. He needs the PGA Championship. Do you see a scenario where this can play out in a way where he can do something really special?
He's played well enough this year. You know, he's gone through a couple of years where his health has not been the best. He's had wrist problems and things of that sort. He's played well enough this year to get himself onto a leaderboard occasionally on a Sunday afternoon. There's certainly a rooting interest for Jordan. The key for him is Jordan makes enough birdies to win no matter where he plays. The key is he makes too many double bogeys, not bogeys, too many double bogeys that disrupt his rounds. So what he has said going into this tournament, he has to manage extremely well. He has to make good choices. Jordan has sort of a Phil Mickelson quality about him in that he's willing to try something that's a little more difficult than you should be trying. But if he can avoid the doubles, he'll be a factor, I think, for the week.
So he is a bit of a longer shot here for this tournament. But is there somebody that you think that is also considered a long shot we really should be paying attention to, whether it's Justin Thomas or somebody like that?
Well, first of all, you mentioned Justin Thomas. I'll encourage people, if they want to watch this championship, to look at the tee times late afternoon tomorrow, because in a row you have going off Tommy Fleetwood, Cameron Young, Justin Thomas, Scottie Scheffler, Matthew Fitzpatrick, and Justin Rose. They're all three, and those groups are all three in a row going off starting at St. Louis time, 2:43. As far as a long shot, if it does rain and the greens are moderated, maybe one of the best players tee to green on tour is Sungjae Im. He's a machine off the tee and off the fairway. If he finds up, but he's a horrible putter. That's being kind, I suppose. He's not very good on the green. And if he can get greens that he can handle, he's not going to win a tournament with his putter, but he's lost several with his putter. If he could get in there with good circumstances on the greens, he would be a dangerous factor. And you know, a guy that we should mention because he's trying to make his way back into the PGA Tour is Brooks Koepka. Koepka has won two PGA championships, including here in St. Louis. And right now, Koepka leads the tour in greens and regulation. So that's a positive sign for Brooks, I think.
That's a good pick. I heard you on Sunday with me say Tyrrell Hatton. Do you still feel that way?
Yeah, I do like Hatton just as a competitor. I don't know that the golf course suits him particularly well. But he's had, you know, he made a significant run at the Masters, almost got to the lead. At Oakmont, he was a factor. He's able to play competitively. And we want Hatton to get on the leaderboard because he'll get television coverage. And there is no more entertaining player in golf than Tyrrell Hatton throwing temper tantrums.
One last thing, Dan. So as we're watching this, And for folks just joining us, this is KMOX senior golf editor Dan Reardon. He's out covering his 100, I always get the number wrong. I want to say 134 majors, but you corrected me on Sunday.
It's there's two that I attended, and 130, this I think is 133 that I will have covered.
That's just
I was at one U.S. Open, one Open Championship, just as a spectator.
That's just an insane number. Well, we're going to count those. That's just an insane number. but my last thing for you is the reason we even heighten the importance of golf this year is the BMW Championship is here. Can you let people know what you anticipate that field to look like? I know we're a ways away, but who should people be concentrating on closely in this championship that they will see walking Bellerive in August?
Just pay attention to the names, Tom. It's very simple. When we get to BMW, that's going to be a qualifying tournament. In other words, they're going to play the week before in Memphis, and then they're going to cut that field down. And then after St. Louis, they'll cut it to 30 and go to Atlanta. So we'll have the cream of the crop at Bellerive. There will be no stragglers. There will be no special invitations. There will be no ceremonial performers. This will be the guys that have had the best year on tour in 2026. There's no carryover from the previous year. So all you need to do is look at the leaders, look at the names, and know that these are the people you're going to have a chance to see, to follow, and enjoy here in St. Louis in August.
Appreciate you, buddy. Have a great time in Philadelphia. We'll hear your reports on Total Information AM. I think you'll probably be jumping in on some of our shows and certainly sports on a Sunday morning. Thank you.
Always enjoyed it, gentlemen.
Dan Reardon covering the PGA Championship just outside Philadelphia. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back with our Budweiser Toast of the Week and more Cardinal baseball on the Gas House Gang on KMOX with Chris Ranji and Matt Pauly. I'm Tom Ackerman. Back after this.
Now, back to the Gas House Gang.
Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling. And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis, Chesterfield Fence and Deck, and Budweiser.
On 104.1 FM, KMOX.
All right, it's time for our Budweiser Toast of the Week. It's presented by Budweiser for 150 years. This Bud's for you with Matt Pauly, Chris Ranji. I'm Tom Ackerman. It labels out, gentlemen. Nice job. Into the camera, we have our Budweiser bottles here, and there's a little label on top. It says, since 1876, 150 years of Budweiser.
You know,
this thing is cold.
It's very cold. And this thing got made, what, like mile that way?
That's right.
Not even a mile. Maybe,
that's right.
What, maybe 2 miles?
They're celebrating 150 years. You can go take
it's amazing.
A tour and go see, have some day fresh Budweiser.
Just went to a wedding there.
Did you?
Had a reception this weekend.
In the beer garden?
In the beer garden.
Which brings me to an announcement.
Uh-oh.
If I may, the Beer Garden is going to be the location of the Redbird Roundtable. This is happening on May 28th. It's the night before the Cards Cubs series. And I will be joined there, very happy to announce this, by Ozzie Smith and Al Hrabowski and Matt Adams. The three of them will be joining me on stage, and you can be part of this. This is the Budweiser experience at Anheuser-Busch, but it's called the Redbird Roundtable at the Beer Garden. It's a meet and greet with those players, a live panel discussion, talking ball. Of course, we'll be telling some stories. We're going to go for an hour. So the event is from 4:30 to 6:30. A Big City, the Mad Hungarian, and the Wizard will be joining me on stage for an hour. We'll go from 5 to 6. We'll have a good time with it. You can go to BudweiserTours.com. I'm looking at it right here. It's the first thing on the list, BudweiserTours.com. So my toast is to those three Cardinal players right there, Ozzie Smith, Al Hrabowski, and Matt Adams. And what I love about them is they represent three different eras of Cardinal baseball, the Mad Hungarian in the 70s, Ozzie in the 80s, Big City in the 2000s. And going into actually the next decade, the 2010s. And all of them had some big, big moments with this team. Two of them are Cardinal Hall of Famers. Just much appreciation for the Cardinals alumni who stay in St. Louis and become part of events like this. So cheers to those guys.
Amazing.
Thank you very much.
Looking forward to it.
Oh, it's going to be great.
I've done caravans with two of those three. I've done caravans with Al and with Matt. They're so good in those situations.
Yeah. First caravan I ever did was with Matt Adams, was a player on our caravan.
We had Matt at the Gas House broadcast at Rally House a few weeks ago.
That's right.
It was right before the season started, wasn't it?
It was.
And he's fantastic.
He's really good. He's
with
really
us for the whole hour?
Yeah. So appreciate those guys. Ozzy, Al Raboski, Matt Adams. It's BudweiserTours.com, and you can go to the Redbird Roundtable May 28th at the Beer Garden at Anheuser-Busch. I wonder what we'll be talking about. Who knows where the team will be by then. But, Matt, I think they'll be in the hunt. Like, this is what I wanted to end with. Was our last, what do we have, about 3 minutes here? Our last 3 or 4 minutes. See how I did that? Taking 4 minutes. Is looking at the Central. Let's just be honest with ourselves here. And I'll start with Matt Adams, Matt Pauly. Where do you see this division going? Are the Cubs, who have lost 3 in a row now, are battling the Braves here, a team capable of running away with it? Or do you see the Brewers, Cardinals, Pirates, Reds? Who do you see hanging in this race right now?
I think the Cubs on paper are the best team in baseball. There are some flaws that they have. You look at their pitching, you look at their bullpen. They've injuries. Dealt with a ton of injuries in the starting rotation. The proverbial gun to the head, I look at the Cubs as the favorite to win the division. The Brewers scare the living you-know-what out of me right now. They just got Yelich back yesterday against the Cardinals. They got Churio back. They got Vaughn back. They always are going to pitch. They just grow pitching in Milwaukee. So those are, I think those are the two best teams in the division on paper. The Reds have been a bit disappointment this year, and we saw what they did down the stretch of the season last year. Pirates have the pitching. That pitching they have, led by Paul Skeens, again last night, 8 innings, does not give up a run. So I think there's legitimately good teams in this division from top to bottom. I do think the Cubs on paper are a step ahead of the other teams, unfortunately.
And I'm not doing it with the Brewers, man. I learned my lesson last year and the year before that and the year before that. I had counted them out, I don't know how many times, and even when they were in last place, I knew, hey, it's still, what, April? I think they were in last place in April, maybe the beginning of this month. Just never again am I going to doubt them. Until they prove to me that they aren't a playoff team, I'm just going to assume they'll be there at the end.
Your division leaders right now are the Cubs, the Braves, and the Padres. If the season were to end today, and obviously it doesn't, but your wild card teams would be Brewers, Cardinals, Dodgers. Beyond that, Pirates and Reds, who we all sort of pushed off a little bit. So my question is, who else is there? Are the Diamondbacks capable? Are the Phillies? I don't think the Nationals are. I don't think the Marlins are. I don't think the Giants are. And I think the Mets are toast unless they somehow pull a miracle together. So who could make a run? I got to think the Phillies, right?
Phillies, without a doubt.
They're going to make a run.
I mean, they've gotten old, but they haven't gotten so old that they don't have something left in them.
Let me throw this one at you, fellas. How about in the American League if the playoffs started today?
Half the field would be below 500.
I don't think it's half, but it's at least the White Sox.
I knew you were going to say that.
And they're right. They'd be the sixth seed.
Those fans are fired up right now.
Tampa would be number one. Rays are good this year.
Yesterday,
and then that sixth seed is Chicago. That is a game under 500.
Yesterday, there were only 4 teams in the American League 500 or above. So if you got 6 teams in there, you got some under 500 clubs.
That is correct. It's the Mariners, A's, Cleveland, New York, and Tampa.
Cleveland's barely over 500.
As a matter of fact, now the Reds lost, so that kind of messes this up. But going into yesterday, there were only 2 teams that would be out of last place in the NL Central, the Rays and the Yankees. Everybody else would have been in the cellar.
Seriously, how about the DH just evening? Remember when it was the AL was the best league for years and years and years? The DH just coming into the National League has leveled it all out.
I love this game. Love me some baseball. Thank you for the cheers, Laurie. Real Third Man says you're saying there's a chance. I do.
Of course
there's a chance. I will say there's a chance. Thanks for joining us, Matt, on short notice. Good to have you. Gas House Gang continues on KMOX. We actually have a program tomorrow before leading into Cardinal baseball. It's kind of cool, actually.
That's right. Late game, so we'll be full show, right?
We got a 2:05 game, so Matt will have the pregame going into that. So Gas House going into Cardinals pregame,
Bernie
going into
with
Cardinals.
Me. Yeah, Bernie McLiss and me. We'll be
there
for
you. A lot of Cardinals coverage on KMOX. Thanks for being with us.